Hey, this is Rich. Quick note while you're listening, there's a part in the show where I talk about a credit card tip and keeping your info up to date. Just put the word salary in front of that when you hear it. It'll make sense. I promise. Showtime! Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich, and I'm here with Wim, and you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we take a fun, formative look at work and money for the rising professional. Today, we're going to talk about the five best career moves you can make in your 30s, in your 20s. Don't worry, it'll make sense when we talk about it. But first, what's good, good sir?
It was a long but good weekend, and I had this strange feeling washing over me at some point during the week, and I'm like, what's going on? Am I getting sick? Am I getting ill? What is this? And I realized I was happy. Yeah.
What?
I was happy. It was a good week. I'm in a good place in life, and I'll weave those in where appropriate in the moves that I made in my 20s that are now paying off in my 30s.
Power to you for that, brother. Power to you for that. Look at you all happy and feeling sick because you feel good. I'm not sure what that really means about your psyche right now, but
I appreciate that, man. You ever had that happen where you're just kind of sitting around, you're just feeling content, and you're like, what is this? What is this happiness? Is this happiness washing over me? And I think that's what happened this weekend.
Yeah, I was definitely power walking on Wednesday this week. And so I'll talk about this on TGOS, but I went to a wedding last weekend, and it was like one of those quick trips, quick turnaround, see a bunch of people, be up, talking, falling asleep at odd times, then right back to work. And the first day this past week that I was awake and like truly woke, I was walking around, I was like power walking around the building, saying hello to people I wouldn't normally say hey to, remembering names I wouldn't normally remember. Bad things happened and I just smiled through it. And I was like, yo, I think this is contentment. Like I have energy and I'm having a good day, even though bad things have happened. So I'm right there with you on that one.
Good to hear, brother. Good to hear. And I hope it's the same for the listeners.
Yes, as do I. So in terms of announcements, not much new this week, but if you've been enjoying Paychecks and Balances, you should definitely drop by and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you don't know how to do that, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/review. It'll give you instructions for how to navigate iTunes. And also, we're now in the Google Play Music Store. So if you've been checking out podcasts and you're into tech and all of that stuff, you may have heard that Google Play Music is now, well, it now contains podcast, for lack of a better way of wording it. So we're in there. So if you're on an Android phone and you've been looking for a different way to listen to the show, Google Play Music is an option for you. We encourage you to check that out. And again, hit us up with them 5 stars. So anything pre-show for you?
Not pre-show, sir.
All right, cool, man. So getting into the topic for today, but first, I did have a kind of a reminder tip of sorts on the credit card front. And it was just something that Bubblekins shared with me that I was like, oh, that's a really good idea. And so that is, if you do have a credit card, to keep your info up to date, like with your bank or the credit card company, because depending on the provider, they might increase your limit without hitting you with the hard credit check. Because, you know, sometimes they'll be like, yeah, you want a limit increase? Well, let us run your credit first. And it's like, nah, like, how about you just give me like the limit increase? Like, why do you have to hit me with the credit check? So I lose points in the process. And so she kept her info up to date and they just hit her with like a big increase, which reduced her debt utilization, which boosted her credit score. So I was like, yo, let me do the same thing. So haven't seen that magic limit increase come through, but it's something that may be helpful depending on who your credit card is with. So I'm not sure if you've had experience with that.
Yeah, I'll jump in. And I don't know what's going on. I'm not familiar enough with the industry or keeping up with. I know the federal government just met recently, so I don't know if that had to affect it as far as interest rates go. But I'm starting to get those great interest rates from like the 90s again, like those 0% interest till 2024, some ridiculous year. And I got one recently and I actually took advantage of this. It was a 0% interest for 12 months, 0% balance transfer. And I haven't seen a 0% balance transfer since college. Like I can't even think of the last time I saw a 0% balance transfer.
So not even 3%, not even 4%.
No, 0%, sir, 0%. And I'm actually going to talk about that on a future show, because now I'm at a point, and I'll probably call it something to the effect of credit roulette, but I'm at a point now where I have enough cards with no balances on them,
yeah,
that now they're sending me in free interest, and I might basically do this rotation where I move everything to the next card, and I think I'll have an entire year where I won't pay any interest on any outstanding balance anywhere.
Yo, some random cab driver in some city that I can't remember was telling a story about how they were moving, like somehow they were living this elaborate life and not accumulating interest because they were moving big balances from card to card to card. I forget how they were doing it. And then they were like using points to like pay off other cards. I kind of want to find that person again. I'm not sure how I'll make that happen, but it sounds like there are some things that people can do on that front, but I'll let you do the research and come back to the people.
Yeah, I definitely speak to it. It was pretty interesting. I'm putting the wheels in motion. So for people who are wondering, like, I thought you were debt free, and I was, but I took on a little bit with the move, and I had opened up a 0% interest card, which closes out in 2017. So I'm like, okay, how can I continue this 0% interest lifestyle? And it looks like I might be able to perpetuate it for another 12 months.
You are having a great weekend.
I'm having a run.
Yeah, man. Power to you. So what I had for today, I was originally called Washed Reads, and it was when we were still doing TGOS, but I've kept it on the docket, wanted to get to it at some point, and now seems like a good time. So I came across an article on time.com called 5 Best Career Moves to Make in Your 30s. I'm having problems with the word career today. I think I'm going to limit how much I say it. And I read this article and I was like, yo, these are definitely things to keep in mind in your 30s, but they're also important if you're in your 20s and you want to get ahead of the game. So this will hopefully be helpful to people both on the wrong and right side of 30, whichever one you basically think that you fall into. And so the article is basically saying, you know, steps to help you move into leadership. And so for the professionally ambitious, you can work on these things now to really get you ahead of some of your peers. And number one on this list was boost leadership skills by taking on more responsibility and looking for tasks that will allow you to manage coworkers. And so I think when people are earlier on in their career, and I know at least for myself, I was just like, yo, I want to do a good job. Like, you know, throw more work at me. I want to do a good job. But depending on the industry that you're in, when you come in, a lot of what you're doing is busy work. It could be busy work. It could be a lot more transactional. And you don't necessarily get an opportunity to kind of own much other than these tasks that are coming your way. And one thing I hear a lot of people talk about, like, oh, I wasn't being challenged enough. Like, you know, I didn't get this opportunity to manage any of these projects. My boss isn't giving me cool projects to work on. And it's like, yo, sometimes you got to ask for those things. And I've gotten that feedback before where it's like, you know, you haven't taken on enough ownership. And it's like, well, you didn't give me anything. And it's like, well, it's also on you to ask and look for opportunities to want to take ownership and take leadership and own something. And so I tie this to what I see with a lot of companies where they want to see you operate at the next level before promoting you into it. So if your goal is to become a manager or move to a senior, they want to see you already performing at that level before making it official. And when you have these types of projects under your belt, or you're looking for opportunities to lead, or maybe you see something that's broken and you're like, hey, I can fix this, or you start a committee around some issue, those are things that'll get you an opportunity to kind of lead folks. Any thoughts on that part?
Yeah, we talked about this on another show, and I should probably just stop with that introductory clause because we talk about everything on previous shows.
Pretty much.
But that being said, where you use your current job for your next job, because I think a lot of people, they're like, well, I don't want to take on a task. And it mentions in the article about, you know, some people don't hesitate to take on work that's unpaid. They're like, well, I'm not going to do that. That's not my job or whatever. But it might be a resume building opportunity, or it could prepare you for your next job. So I guess an example that I would use is my job was really, now that I look back, my job was really training intensive, and I would take advantage of that. And I took some public speaking classes that they offered. I took the next public speaking class. They offered a public speaking to the office, and then I asked them for opportunities to improve public speaking in general. And I say that because there's just these skill sets that I feel are universal that you can use at any job.
Right.
And if you are somewhere in a company or a profession that allows you to expand on those just because you won't apply them within your current role, I definitely started putting those on my resume. And I remember we had a question on, it was either at pay balances. I think it was pay balances. How quickly should you put something on your resume? Me, I'm putting on there after 8 hours. And I say that somewhat facetiously, but if I do it, I'm quickly thinking about, you know, when can I add this to my resume? So I do say, as soon as I feel that I'm knowledgeable enough in the skill set, like if they assign me a new software, a new project, I actually keep a running list of things to add to my resume. And it's not like I'm always actively applying for jobs, but I am always actively keeping my resume up to date.
Keeping those receipts.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So I just would caution people to not be confined to your current job or your current role, because that might limit your thinking or the options you should be pursuing.
Yeah, man. And the other thing that I wanted to also mention with this, which was in the initial point, is looking for opportunities that allow you to manage coworkers. And so that could be a project around some system. That could be refining the way something's done in the office. That could be being on an event committee and planning some type of mixer or some type of function. Anything that allows you to kind of be able to delegate and be the person getting updates from people around something, being able to assign tasks and manage a project from end to end when there's multiple people involved, that's going to reflect favorably on you. And sometimes you got to create those opportunities for yourself. So,
The only other thing I would kind of generally add, as far as looking at myself on the wrong side of 30, at least that's my perspective. But one thing that I don't think I did this poorly, but I wish I had done it better, is better knowing myself. So we're kind of, and I think there's articles around working towards leadership positions, but some people that they want to work their way out of work. Like they want to escape the matrix, or they want to go into a side hustle or a 9-to-5. But I think the sooner you know which path you want, or two paths, if we talk about complementary or parallel skill sets, I just think I spent too much time doing competing, and we talked about that as well, opportunities. So I'm like, I want to do A, and I want to do one. And it's like, that has nothing to do with each other. And it would actually pull me in different directions instead of, I'm going to do A, B, and C. And then if either of those pathways work out, at least I'll be further along on the same path instead of the conflict. I just think you get to a point in life where it gets more difficult to do conflicting interests versus competing interests. But I think it helps if you know what? I don't want to be in here. I want to go into consulting. And 35, 40, I want to transition out. I want to retire at 65. I want to retire at 55 or 45, whatever that goal is. Then you can start retroactively applying those steps to achieving it. I think sometimes people are just on my famous no plan plan, which is itself a plan. It's just a bad plan. So if you have one with the outcome in mind, then you can kind of build backwards for how you can start achieving it.
Yeah, man. There's a lot that people can do even within their current role and just kind of looking at where they want to be next. And I was actually talking to a friend recently about kind of doing different things and how to get better during the day gig, but also the outside of work stuff. And someone gave this person the advice that you get to a certain point where you have to make a decision about, are you going to keep working toward being an in-office professional, or are you really going to start working toward becoming an independent entrepreneur? And it does get more difficult, you know, as you try to move up the corporate ladder. If you're doing that by day, that's probably less time that you have, or you have to get more creative about how you find time to do this other thing, which may be pulling away from your ability to rise even quicker within the organization. And vice versa, if you're an entrepreneur, you know, you really want to focus on that, but you keep getting pulled into the day gig stuff, which is taking you further away from that ultimate goal. So number two on the list was foster peer relationships, which is definitely something you can do in your 20s. One tip in the article is to praise accomplishments of others, because it'll make them more likely to advocate for you. And, you know, it could just be to, hey, congrats. When you see a company email go out about something that someone did, hitting them back and saying, hey, congrats, good job, great work. Or next time you see them in the kitchen, actually saying something to them in person and saying, you know, you appreciate what they're contributing. And I think people just kind of naturally start to feel like they, not that they owe you something, but hey, you advocate for me, I'll advocate for you. And these are the people who become your referrers, your informal references, and feedback providers when it comes time for 360 performance reviews, if your organization has that. And if you don't know what that is, it's basically when it's not just your manager reviewing you, it's your manager, it's your peers, it could be people across the different business units that you're working closely with. And this is a way to easily build relationships with those people. And say, for example, they move elsewhere. They go to another company that's really interesting to you, and you look through LinkedIn and see that they're there, and you say, hey, I'm interested. They're going to be much more likely to refer you or provide an informal reference that you may not even know about, because they have a good experience with you from working with you in the past. So thoughts on this one?
I'm actually going to quote one of our listeners and say, praise in public, advise in private, was, I think, the insight that she got. And I think she and I think correctly, felt some type of way about getting advised, or I think in this case, chastised in public instead of praised. And so I also had a supervisor slash mentor give me some similar advice as far as recognizing the contributions of your team. So a lot of people and managers, especially just by the state of where they are in the organization, can kind of sit silently. You ever seen the silent credit taken for? So someone's like, oh, this is a great presentation. And the person didn't create the presentation, but they don't say one way or the other. They just kind of sit there with a smile on their face. And you're like, didn't I do this?
Yeah, and you're kind of
like,
awkward.
And so then it makes you look bad. You jump in, actually, that's mine. And so you kind of just, I try to say, oh, you know, I appreciate that. And that was created by, you know, John Doe or, you know, Jane Smith or whatever the case may be. So I, whenever you can recognize others for the work that they've done, or just simply, you know, you might, what my boss was really good at is even when I did mess up and recognize that mess up and he knew I messed up, all he would say is, okay, we'll look into that. And then we would talk in private about, hey, you messed up. Let's fix that.
Yeah.
You know, don't let that happen again. But instead of him, oh, you know, Wim messed that up, not me. Like, and I've had bosses like that too. It's like, well, I didn't mess that up. They're quiet. I heard this somewhere. They're quick. The first in line to take praise and last in line to take blame. First in line to push you under the bus. Don't be that person.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last time I worked with someone like that, or where someone put someone. No, it's been within the last year where there was someone who would happily put people on blast at any opportunity if it was the difference between them looking good and them not looking so great, which sometimes you have to do, but a lot of times it's just unnecessary, especially when it's in public settings, like what you mentioned. So yeah, if there's an opportunity to be able to talk about that privately, I would aim for that, unless you're having an open discussion with the team and it's kind of like a debrief where everyone's talking about who did what, then it may be kind of more appropriate to explain where the breakdown happened, but trying not to put the person on the defensive either. So,
yeah, it's definitely a balancing act. And I have one person specifically in mind, but yeah, you have to find an opportunity to coach and provide feedback. And I think where you gain credit is, I try to establish very early on, and someone taught me this, that if you build up a foundation of you have your team's best interest in mind and you show that, then they're more willing to, and it should be the exception to be like, hey, you messed this up, fix it. But if you do that every time and you do it in public every time and it just seems like you're stepping over people to get to the top, then that kind of distrust and that dysfunctional relationship will develop. And I think that's what you're trying to avoid. So I think some people, I don't want people to say, oh, well, I think sometimes you have to praise and chastise in public because you want the team to benefit from that. And I usually say that. I'd be like, hey, this one person messed this up. And normally I would go behind closed doors and have this conversation, but this is something that anyone could have messed up. So I think the team will benefit from having this conversation. And if possible, I usually try to let that person know, hey, you did this incorrectly, but this could have happened to anyone. Let's all use this as a lesson learned. If you do not mind, I'd like to use this example so that we are all benefiting going forward. And again, I think if you establish that foundation, like, hey, I'm not trying to ooscre you. I have the team's best interest in mind. And this is the exception because I don't call you out all the time. I think people are more willing and open to have those types of conversations.
Yeah. And mistakes are going to happen. It's just, when you start making those same mistakes over and over, that's when it becomes a really bad look.
Agreed.
You really got to be able to learn from that stuff. So number three on the list, keep ex bosses in your corner. And these are the people that can become or remain mentors even after you leave, the people who are still going to advocate for you as a reference even after you leave the organization. And it's good to keep in contact with those people, especially if you had a good rapport. Let them know where you landed. Maybe send them your updated resume from time to time so they can stay refreshed on what you did while you worked with them, but also having an understanding of the roles that you've been in since then so that they can kind of speak to your future potential in a way that's going to make sure you land whatever job it is that you're interviewing for. Because hopefully at the point that they're doing references, it's already decided that you're the front runner.
Yeah. I think those relationships are important because you never know when you'll have to exercise them. So for me, I've kept in touch with my two former bosses, and actually in this instance, both of them were in different timelines, my mentors. And I was applying for two master's programs recently, and one of them required three letters of references. And so had I not had these relationships established, I would have been searching day and night, because it's not like my peer group is just huge and full of people that I could get to assist me with writing a letter of recommendation. So I knocked out those two really quick, and they were happy to do so. I mean, they both knocked them out like within the next few weeks. So technically, I only really had to find one letter of reference, and then I just used my recommendation, I should say. And I just used my current boss. But I would have never known that going forward. And so it's not about, you know, taking advantage of those relationships, but when you have those type of resources and networking opportunities available, and I had to do it in a really quick time frame. It wasn't like I had the luxury of 6 months and I could do a research and a panel and like, who, you know, I couldn't do like a Survivor Island or who's going to write these letter of recommendations for me. Like, it had to be done, you know, immediately. So I was really glad that I had maintained those relationships. And they wrote some great letters of recommendation, to your point, because we had worked together both professionally and personally, and they had mentored me. So they could, I think they wrote more textured letters of recommendation than I would have gotten from maybe if I reach back 3 years to some boss I haven't talked to in 6 years and just like, hey, by the way, can you write this letter of recommendation? Because I can't find anybody else. It's like when you're trying to find your best man because you don't have a good friend. Yeah, don't, you know, be careful with that.
Yeah, you got to be careful who you put out there on your behalf. They could make things go in a way that would not be favorable to anybody involved.
And I think people know that too. Like, hey, I haven't heard from you in a decade. Can you write me a letter of recommendation? It's like, okay, yeah, but clearly, like if you reached out to me like a Facebook messenger, like you had to go back in your history a little bit to find me to write this letter of recommendation, or whatever the case may be.
Yo, you know what, man? And that reminds me, it's a slight tangent, but I'm gonna try and bring it right back. I get messages, like serious messages, from people on Facebook telling me they need something or they got questions about like their resume. And I don't update my profile that much on this account. And I'm like, yo, if you really need, well, first off, I haven't heard from you and I can see the chat history. Like, we haven't communicated in like seriously 4 years. So like, it's still there. I can see the last thing you said, and it was you asking for something then. But then people hit me up and they're like, yo, it's time sensitive. But I'm like, but you hit me up on Facebook. Like, if it was time sensitive, would you not email me? Would you not call me? I mean, I looked in my phone. I see that you have my number, or I have yours, and I assume that you probably have mine. Like, but I'm not going to message you because now it's like 2 months ago that you needed this thing. But all you had to do was call. I'll never understand why people choose to do that instead. It's like someone sending a DM like, yo, can you hurry up and reply, when they clearly have your phone number? Makes no sense.
I don't have the answers.
I didn't expect you to. I just had to get that out.
You do seem to feel some type of way about it.
Yeah, it's been like that lately. There's been a series of things that I felt some type of way about. But number four on the list, manage your public image. And this is basically branding. And so within the article, they mentioned 87% of recruiters that responded to a JobVite survey said that they use LinkedIn. And LinkedIn has played a role in me personally finding two of my last three jobs. So the position that I'm in now, I was contacted on LinkedIn about this role. The position before this, I knew that they went and checked out my LinkedIn profile before they gave me a call to talk about the role. So they wanted to confirm what was on my resume. And so it really does make a difference when you're telling a consistent story across platforms, so you don't give them any reason to screen you out. And I know I've cost myself opportunities in the past by not having my profile up to date, where I've applied to a job, then saw that someone from the company, I mean, they didn't have their name because they had their option where it was just like a silhouette and it said somebody from. But I could tell, because it was a position that I recently applied for, that they were checking out my LinkedIn profile to make sure that things were consistent. The wording was a bit different. Some of the titles were different. And then coincidentally, I didn't hear anything else from that company. But once I made that change and then a company went and did that verification, I still got that call and ended up going in there and getting that job. And so the article, it also talks about Twitter and blogging. So this ties into what I've said before, or what I was just saying again about telling that consistent story across platforms. So if you're saying, if you're going to have your website on your resume, you're going to have your Twitter handle on there, or you're using your real name and you're easy to find, just make sure that you're somewhat consistent in who you are across these different spots.
I was just going to share for this one. We did talk about the importance of personal branding and mentorship, both on episode 59. And I'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. And so if you're looking for that on our feed, it's actually an episode that we dropped under the Two Guys, One Show brand. So it's in the archives on the paychecksandbalances.com website. So definitely check the show notes to get access to that one. And then last on the list was upgrading your, actually, I'm going to take a quick step back because I thought about something else with managing your public image. And that's also just in the office in general. Now, you don't have to run around kissing butts. You don't have to be fake to everybody. You don't have to, you know, stand and have 30-minute conversations about someone's day when you really don't care that much about their day. You just need to be cordial. You need to offer to help where it makes sense. Take some type of interest, even if it's just like, hey, you know, how was that trip that you went on? And maybe you listened for 5 minutes. And I've talked about this, I think, in a previous version of this show, where people who ask more questions and take more concern in others are more likely to be liked themselves. And it's not racing to be part of a popularity contest, but if you've ever known somebody who they just seem like no matter how many times they lose a job, how many times something goes wrong, they still seem to find their way into a new opportunity, or they still seem to get referred into a new role. A lot of that has to do with the reputation that they've built, the network that they've built, even though their reputation may seem like it should be something else because you had a bad experience with them. It's possible that with the majority of people, they've set it up so that those people see them a certain way, which makes those people comfortable supporting them if they ever refer them or ask for a referral on another role. So on number five, upgrade your industry efforts. So instead of just going to conferences, get on board as a speaker or a panel moderator. And it's just going to, and this is something you can do whether you got a day gig or you're trying to get your own thing off the ground. Yes, it's cool to attend conferences. I attend them, but it's also cool. And I'm not saying I'm the barometer of coolness. I realize how that may have come off, but going and actually being the person who's in front of the room, who's leading the session, who's on the speaker docket, who, you know, is in the program with a picture, and hopefully like it's a decent picture and it's not like a selfie. Yo, I was on LinkedIn looking through candidates for a role, and I saw someone, and like their LinkedIn picture was like them in a selfie, but the camera was in the picture, like their phone was in the actual picture. And I was like, yo, but people still doing that in 2016?
That's impressive, actually.
Yeah, man. So
he wasn't a party promoter, was he?
Nah, it was some like random woman, and like it wasn't even just like an iPhone. It had like a colorful case with like a kitten on it and some other stuff. It was just a lot going on. So anything to add on getting on as a speaker or a moderator for a panel?
So I talked about public speaking on episode 93 again in our previous thread. So I'll link to that in our show notes as well. Not really. I know that like public speaking is like the top three fear for people across the board since like the beginning of time. And I think it still is. But as far as I've done some public speaking opportunities, and I may have some opportunities to do so again in the future. And people ask, like, how do you prepare? Does it get easier? No and no. And the thing that, I mean, it's going to sound cliche, but probably the most meaningful advice that I could offer is you learn through doing. It is literally on the job training. So you can take some training to prepare for public speaking, you know, the ums and the uhs and the and things that you should avoid. But as far as doing it and getting comfortable with it, I can think of no other better way to do so than to actually do it. So I think that's what this article is trying to encourage. Like, that's why, and it's a great networking opportunity. And I'm kind of biased, but public speaking and a few other skill sets, because people shy away and don't want to do them, they're just one of those skill sets that if you can make it your niche, you can shine because other people aren't competing to do so. Like, most people aren't rushing to stand in front of a room of 20, 30, 40, 50 thousands of their peers and talk about a topic. So if you can master that skill set, you'll be light years ahead of a lot of people, 90% of people almost.
Yo, it's like instantly makes you an expert in some ways. And it's kind of like the same thing as putting out a book. As soon as you put a book out or you put something written out there that's more advanced than a blog post, you automatically have expertise in that topic. Even if you don't feel you're an expert, the fact that you're in the front of the room talking about something, everyone else thinks that you're an expert on that particular topic. Unless, of course, you bumble and sound like an idiot, but because you listen to this show, that's probably not going to happen to you.
And as we talked about, people root for you to succeed. It's kind of like, and I guess maybe it's all like dating, but, you know, in your mind, you think you're going to go over there and she's going to curse you out, talk about your mama, your shoes, your dog, and the time you tripped in fifth grade. But the likelihood is she's going to say yes or no. I mean, the statistical odds are she's going to be interested or not interested. And that's the same thing with a crowd. The difference is it's actually on your side, because usually when you're speaking in front of a crowd, they want you to be there, unless they were mandated to come to that training, which I've been to some of those and it can be painful, but I also know ways to spice those up as well.
Or if there was like one speaker slot left and they selected your pitch over theirs, they may want to see you stumble a little bit, but that's a certain type of person.
Yeah, I can definitely say if you're in the last slot or the slot before lunch, do not go over. In fact, in early if at all possible.
I actually agree with that, because my mind starts wandering to the table, to wherever the food is, or like thinking about what's at the cafeteria or whatever is nearby, what stores are around. So, yeah, if you can end on time right before lunch, definitely do that. Maybe even a couple minutes before, so people got time to get out the door.
Easy win. And this might be a spinoff topic, but actually I wrote it down when we were talking about number one, which was, as I'm scrolling back here, boost leadership skills by taking on more responsibility. One thing, and I don't want to get on too much of a tangent here, but that I've noticed is money, you know, is quote unquote the root of all evil, but I also think it can be the root of stagnation. I definitely feel that I was much more passionate and I had all these exciting, it's a gift and a curse, it's a catch 22, things that I wanted to achieve when I was making one third of my income, because I'm like, I got to get out, I got to do more, I got to escape the matrix, I got to do boom, boom, boom. I was in all the hustles, I was selling vector knives door to door, anything that I could do to make more money.
I thought you were going
to
say selling drugs. You were like, I was in all the hustles, I was selling. I was like, whoa, buddy.
No, I was not flipping cakes out there with Yeezy. But that being said, as you move up in your career, you get a little bit older, other things happen. I won't go into all the details. It actually becomes harder, because you're like, well, it's just easier for me to work up the corporate ladder. And so you kind of become, my friend called it the golden handcuffs. It's like, well, yeah, I could do that passionate thing that I was interested in, but I got to start over from scratch, or I might have to take a significant salary increase. There's like this, I should know this because I was just studying for the GMAT, but but there's at some point it's where the planes cross and you're like, I think I'm just going to chill and work for the next 35 years. And yeah. I think you got to be careful, and you can start to kind of get relaxed in the comfort of keeping up with the Joneses. You're like, well, yeah, I could go and do that hard hustle thing, or I could just do 9 to 5 for 35 years, you know? And yeah. I think as your income increases, it also becomes easier to justify those decisions.
Yeah. And just like you said, we've talked about just about everything on a previous show, but I'm sure there are times where the person keeps making more money and hopefully their pay is increasing in their current job. And it gets to a point where you're so dependent on that job that you physically feel that you can't get away from it.
True.
Because you're so tied to the compensation, you're so tied to that annual bonus, that great thing that they offer, and that's the whole reason they offer it, to keep you there. So just something to keep in mind if you do have passions for that outside stuff. Money ain't everything, but it does help with a lot of things.
True.
Yeah, so that's it for the list from this Time article, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. Anything else you want to add before we hit the closeout?
Just also to keep in mind internal organizations and boards that you can be a member of. So my last two companies, including the one that I'm working for right now, like they had a list of like 50 boards that I didn't even know existed in the organization. So you might want to follow up with HR or someone to that effect and just say, hey, do we have any committees or memberships that I could be a part of within the organization? I was surprised how many there were.
Yeah. And we have a bunch of them across the whole organization, just because there's so many teams. And even if it's starting an affinity group, so if you're a woman, person of color, starting some type of organization that's for that particular group, some people may think like, oh, I don't want to, you know, make it about race. But a lot more organizations are starting to have these groups where people from a particular background or who have something in common. They have maybe a listserv where they're sending out relevant messages, or they're putting on events to bring more awareness to challenges. So I think Twitter has Blackbirds for their Black Affinity Group. I know Google has the Black Googlers Network. Other companies have different things. So it could even be something like that. You know, if it's you and like four other Black people, you can unite and scare everybody. But yeah, that's it for this episode. So we want to thank you for listening to Paychecks and Balances. And again, if you've enjoyed the show, don't forget to drop by on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. And if not that, you know, just make sure you share the show with your network. There's probably someone that you know on Facebook, someone that you know on Twitter who could benefit from the conversations that we're having on this show, where we're hopefully not scaring people. But yeah, that's about it for this one. And I think we're good, because I know every time I don't ask you anything else a second time, you have something else. Do you have something else?
I do not this time.
Of course not. So until next week or next time, be safe. We out. Peace.